Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show. Hello, Cannabis Business Minds. This is your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins, and I'm excited to chat with you guys on 420 today. Apologies for the delay in podcast. It has been a whirlwind of the last four months. The last 4 months, 2018, from a business perspective, has been great. From a new venture perspective, has been great. And from a cannabis legalization in California standpoint, has been kind of slow. So in California, I know we focused so much of our time last season on California and what was happening with the legalization. And I'm sure a lot of you guys have been, you know, if you're in California, have been able to go and see what the adult use market's like. But on the back end with B2B, it's really relatively slow. I know a lot of my clients and a lot of cannabis operators are still, you know, actually even in the application process right now to get a license locally. And then once that happens, then they're going to have to do a build out, get ready to actually go for production. So I think a lot of us realize this, but now I guess we're actually seeing it, you know, that regulation in business, there's just always that hiccup in growing into a new market and, you know, what exactly is required. I know that there's been more than 5,000 licenses that have been issued in the state of California. And that, you know, there is definitely a thriving market, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Like every regulated state, cannabis compliance is one of the biggest things that people kind of need to worry about. And the cannabis seed-to-sale tracking system metric, it still hasn't been completely installed or implemented into California. So that's probably going to be one of the hiccups a little bit later down the road. But there is so much exciting stuff that's still happening. And, you know, just like everything, I always tell everybody, it's just the very beginning. I know that we've had the longest history of, especially in California, you know, 20 plus years of truly a market that's existed. Yes, we've self-regulated, but definitely a market. And for some of us, it does seem that it's been a very long time. But, you know, with new legalization and honestly, how I see it, federal legalization on the horizon, guys, we're just at the beginning of it. So if you're just listening to this for the first time, or if you really haven't started your cannabis business yet, I'd say don't worry, but start kind of planning and really figuring out how can you get involved in this. And so from the Calligia standpoint, I'm super excited. That's also one of the reasons why I haven't been able to do so many podcasts. We have been hustling. Like, we have a new platform, a whole new solution, and we're really here to help build jobs, you know, help the cannabis operators find the great talent. But really, if you're looking to work in cannabis operations, if you're in administrative services, if you're in manufacturing services, if you're a scientist, if you're honestly anybody that wants to be involved in the cannabis business, make sure you register for Calligia. It's free and it's an opportunity. I mean, we're launching our new platform very soon. It's a huge opportunity for you to get connected, not only with some of the workshops that we have and all that stuff, but with a potential job. So that's how I see it. But today is 420, and you will not be listening to this on 420, but you'll be listening to this soon, and I hope everybody had a 420, great 420. But with the theme of that, and with the theme of honestly how I'm seeing things personally, but from a business perspective of where the market's heading, I want to focus today's show on cannabis legalization. And, you know, I think for many people, there's always the myths of what 420 is. Was it, you know, the time when some students in California would go meet each other and smoke a joint at 420? Was it the police code that, you know, you use for cannabis, or was it something else? But notwithstanding whatever myth it is of the really true origin of 420, we all know that if we're in the cannabis industry, yes, it's a very fun recreational holiday for us. But, you know, I think for many of us, it's the legalization of cannabis. And so I thought, how fitting would it be to talk on today's podcast about the history of hemp and cannabis and take you guys through a little bit of a journey of an Excel spreadsheet, but I promise it won't be a boring journey of hemp and cannabis history in the United States. So, you know, I speak internationally and I was preparing, I love spreadsheets. I'm a CPA, so of course I love spreadsheets, but I was preparing for a presentation a few years back and I'm so curious about, you know, cannabis, you know, why it's been prohibited. I mean, there's definitely reasons why, you know, but I wanted to know, you know, I want to know the facts. I want to know the history behind certain things. I want to know when they happened. I want to know who was involved. I wanted to know something. So I created this massive spreadsheet, 500 lines or more. So we're not going to go over all of that today because I know we only have about 30 minutes. But we're going to go talk about, you know, the very origin of, you know, starts in 1619, guys, in the United States that hemp legalization was passed. So we're talking more than 400 years from today when, you know, hemp is CBD, which is the 0.3% THC that we're still getting, you know, a lot of fluff, or not fluff, but flack, I suppose, from the federal government. So interesting enough, 1619, hemp legalization in the United States was passed. And you know what? Our founding fathers, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson in 1774 and 1797, both those gentlemen were growing hemp. So at Mount Vernon, George Washington was growing hemp as his primary crop in 1797. And so that's very fascinating, but I want to rewind a little bit back to the 1619 because I got too excited and I was jumping ahead. So 1619, hemp legalization was passed. That same year, Virginia passes legislation requiring every farmer to grow hemp. And hemp at that time was allowed to be exchanged as legal tender in Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Maryland. And so that is fascinating, right? So that's, you know, more than 400 years. And so in 1850, so we'll scooch up a bit, a few 200 years, but marijuana was added to the U.S. Pharmacopoeia. And an introduction to medical preparations of cannabis was used in, you know, to be used in Western medicine was actually introduced during that time. And it was listed that marijuana could be the treatment for numerous ailments, including, and I'm honestly not going to pronounce all these correctly, so bear with me, but including tetanus, typhus, cholera, rabies, dysentery, alcoholism, opioid addiction, guys, you know, with that podcast with 80 posts. So we're hearing in 1850, and this is all documentation, right? And marijuana was added to the U.S. pharmacopoeia. And one of the ailments was to help fight opioid addiction. Okay. And then gout, insanity, excessive menstrual bleeding, and among others, right? And so interesting enough, we're talking 1850, this was added in. And guys, this is a 500 line timeline. We're not going to go over all of it, just the most important that I thought for the legalization of cannabis. So we'll fast forward a little bit to 1906. And in 1906, the United States required the labeling of cannabis. So there was the Pure Food and Drug Act that required labeling of any cannabis that was to be over the counter. Okay, so very interesting that the actual labeling was required. I'm seeing this right now with our clients in California about the correct labeling. So, you know, 1906, the United States was requiring this for cannabis. And so in 1913, California passes the first state marijuana law. And California passed the first state marijuana law, though it was missed by many people because it was referred to as the preparations of hemp or loco weed. And these are quotes, right? So this is me taking it from books and all this stuff. So a lot of people probably didn't understand what that was. And just interesting enough, the terminology loco weed. This is 1910 was when the Mexican Revolution started. So interesting enough, just kind of the play on loco and Spanish and all of that. But, you know, 1913 is a very busy year, actually, in this whole timeline. So even though California passes this law, Indiana, Maine, Wyoming, they all ban cannabis, okay? And at that same time, the United States, the U.S. Department of Agriculture grows its first domestic cannabis. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced that it had succeeded in growing domestic cannabis of equal quality to the Indians, or to India. And when foreign supplies interrupted World War I, the U.S. became self-sufficient in cannabis. By 1918, some 60,000 pounds were produced annually, all for pharmaceutical farms east of the Mississippi. Isn't that fascinating? So again, like, it's just curious to see kind of this play of actually what was happening in the early 1900s. So 1915, California decides, hey, you know what? We're going to ban cannabis consumption for non-medical purposes. So they became the first state to ban cannabis consumption for non-medical purposes. That's interesting. You might be asking, like, well, what about the stuff in Indiana and Maine in 1913 where cannabis is banned? I honestly can't tell you. This is a working timeline, and if anybody's interested in helping me in this, please, I'd love to get your comment. But between 1915 and 1930, really a lot of states are now banning cannabis. We're talking Utah, Vermont, Colorado, Nevada, Texas, Louisiana, New York, I think I already mentioned, as well as, you know, that's when the UK in 1928 banned marijuana. And so in 1932, cannabis concerns arise in the United States. So, so this is what I found, is that concerns about the rising use of marijuana and research linking its use with crime and other social problems created pressure on the federal government to take action. So as you can see, like, during this, like, 1913 to the 1932, so many states were kind of banning cannabis. And so the, you know, clearly the federal government is kind of getting this push to do something about it. Rather than promoting federal legalization, the Federal Bureau of Narcotics strongly encouraged state governments to accept responsibility for control of the problem by adopting the Uniform State Narcotics Act, and that's in 1932. 1933, alcohol prohibition ends, right? So interesting enough, we've already seen that, you know, cannabis, I forget where I was reading this, but this is, I'm going to take you back to 2018 really quick. Cannabis really, for a lot of the adult use market, it's going to take away a huge portion of the alcohol revenue stream, right? So it's interesting to see, you know, how the cannabis concerns in the United States are happening in 1932, 1933, alcohol prohibition is ending, right? And so just curious to see the trend in that. And then at that same time, 1933, you know, marijuana is really becoming the target of government control. There's sensationalistic stories linking violent acts to cannabis consumption, right? So we're already kind of seeing a little bit geared towards the reefer madness. So 1934, the Garrison Act, which is a very interesting thing, was passed. And that was passed by the United States, so on the federal level, to outlaw marijuana and other drugs. 1936, the famous movie Reefer Madness is released. And then in 1936, marijuana is replaced by other pain relievers. So interesting enough, it's like, cannabis was obviously in whatever that was, the 1850s, adopted by the U.S. Pharmacopoeia to, you know, what we talked about, opioids, pain relief, gout, all of these things. And then all of a sudden, alcohol kind of becomes back into the scene. The federal prohibition ends. And then 1936, you know, we're also seeing now kind of more of the pharmaceuticals and the pain relievers and all that kind of stuff replace cannabis use. 1937, so just a year later, you know, marijuana is removed from the U.S. pharmacopoeia. And so it lost all of its, you know, legitimacy as a benefit there, which is interesting because in 1937, the American Medical Association really supported the research on cannabis. So it's curious kind of to see those linkages. And And you fast forward it, you know, a little bit to just the jail sentencing and understanding after. So we see in the 1940s, you know, the war is just about ending. You know, we were using hemp. The Hemp for Victory program was actually launched to use hemp to help with World War II. And then we're seeing after the World War II in the 1950s, two very important things that Ohio. So in 1951, the United States, they decide to pass this Boggs Act. And the Boggs Act, basically what it did is it lumped marijuana and narcotic drugs together, and it provided uniform penalties. So we're talking these mandatory minimum sentences in prison. And so that would be for the possession of cocaine, heroin, cannabis, marijuana. So that's in the 1950s. So that's when 1950s, that starts happening. 1955, I wanted to highlight this is it's related to one state in particular, Ohio. Ohio increases the prison sentences for narcotic drugs to 20 to 40 years for the sentence of the sale of narcotic drugs, which is pretty scary. In 1968, Mississippi is actually, despite all this, like, you know, negative stuff about cannabis, the University of Mississippi is the official grower of marijuana for the United States government. And I'll talk a little bit more about that program later and probably on another podcast episode. But yeah, that's quite interesting. And then in 1970, our favorite Controlled Substance Act that we talk about a lot, you know, the Controlled Substance Act, that classified marijuana to have as a Schedule I substance, which we'll talk about in a little bit, to have no accepted medical use. So that's in the 1970s. And then 1972, the first report, and this is a very important thing. So that's when cannabis or marijuana is like, hey, you know what? Schedule I substance, no medicinal value. 1972, the first report of the National Commission on Marijuana was commissioned. And so I don't know if you guys have heard about this before, but it's very interesting. It's called the Schaefer Commission. And it was a 185-page report conducted that recommended that cannabis should be decriminalized for personal use and that personal cultivation be allowed among with the small transfer for no profit. The report does recommend that a regulatory body monitor and tax marijuana throughout the United States. And this report was rejected by Nixon and the U.S. Congress. So very interesting. 1973, the DEA is created. We know just from being in the cannabis industry, the fear from Jeff Sessions and the DEA, and the DEA has done many things with cannabis eradication programs, and they, you know, they make their money from asset forfeitures and, you know, really kind of shutting down cannabis. So that was 1973, and then fast forward to 1975, because this was, again, related to Ohio, how we mentioned the 20 years sentencing. And so the Supreme Court ruled that it was not cruel to criminalize, to basically punish somebody for 20 years for selling cannabis. So that's pretty harsh when you think about that type of sentencing. And that's right around the same time that Oregon actually decriminalized cannabis. So it's just curious to see within the United States the difference in opinions in cannabis and decriminalization versus punishing people for 20 years. So we talked a little bit about, you know, what's up with the Mississippi and the University of Mississippi to actually do anything when it was federally illegal to do anything with cannabis. And, you know, so they have this program. If you've seen Dr. Sanjay Gupta's documentary that he did a few years ago, you'll see a little bit more about the University of Mississippi. But, you know, in 1978, when we clearly said it's completely illegal, Nixon's, you know, all this like war on drugs is really, really about to happen, right? The University of Mississippi delivers 300 joints a month to a patient. And it's a very interesting story. I'll put that into the show notes, but I just wanted to highlight that info. And so let's fast forward to 1980. And so we've talked about synthetic cannabis a little bit, right? And so synthetic cannabis, there's clearly the street synthetic cannabis, but there's also synthetic cannabis that pharmaceutical companies have, and it's called synthetic cannabis. And so one of the major ones was Marinol. And so in 1980, the National Cancer Institute began experiments with a new drug, Marinol. And in 1981, the U.S. agreed to sell Marinol. And so the government agreed to patent Marinol and really use it, really tried to sell it. At that time, it applied to the FDA for permission to market the pill as a treatment for nausea. But in 1984, the DEA actually rejected that because the clinical tests had not been, you know, they weren't actually that efficient. So that's a very interesting thing. And Marinol is, you know, is still an active product. In 1986, the Anti-Drug Abuse Act is enacted. So, you know, this is Reagan's now into office, and Congress and President Ronald Reagan enact the Anti-Drug Abuse Act. And this really increased the mandatory minimum drug sentences on a federal level. And it was the first time that Congress passed mandatory minimum sentences since the Boggs Act that I mentioned in 1951. And so in 1988, Congress also passed a law permitting capital punishment when drug activity resulted in intentional killing. So that's kind of the timeline of where those mandatory minimums also got started. And then, you know, from 1986 to 1996, you know, California really started trying to push. This was where, you know, kind of the AIDS epidemic happened and Bloody Mary started happening. And so in 19, I think the first initiative for cannabis in California was in 1991, and that was in San Francisco with Proposition P. It didn't pass, clearly, until California passed Proposition 215 to legalize medical cannabis in 1996. Guys, you know the rest of history. That's what we're always kind of reading. It's like, oh, California was the first state, and then you kind of see the others. But I really wanted to give you some insight onto the history of legalization, or I guess prohibition, how we should say it. And it's very important to understand this, because when you think about cannabis prohibition, you've got to think about how many industries cannabis really does take on. I mean, we've already seen that cannabis, you know, from an adult use perspective would take on, you know, alcohol from that respect. From a hemp perspective, it takes on paper, it takes on food, it takes on cotton, it takes on many things. And then from a medical perspective, you know, we see in 1850, it was in the pharmacopoeia, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. It was in, you know, 1850. It's, you know, cannabis helps. I mean, we've talked about this so much. I think, like, why the cannabis industry has actually evolved to where it is right now is not necessarily from the adult use perspective. It is from the medical perspective, that cannabis is helping with anxiety. Cannabis is helping with sleep. Cannabis is helping, honestly, with weight loss, and cancer and epilepsy, and the list goes on and on and on. And so, you know, I wanted to, beyond providing you guys this very interesting kind of overview of legalization and prohibition of cannabis, I think it's very important for everybody to understand this, because we are moving at a very fast pace towards federal legalization. One of the things that I wanted to call to everybody's attention is that on April 23rd, the FDA is asking for a public comment on why, and not on why, but on the classification or declassification of cannabis. Guys, I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen, everybody that's listening, this is so, so big. It's big because I want to talk you really quickly through where we do not, in my opinion, as an entrepreneur, as a definitely a medical advocate, but a legalization more advocate, where we do not want to see cannabis at and where we would like to see it. I mean, in my opinion, I think cannabis needs to be clearly regulated, because when you do concentrates, when you do extractions, like we had that episode last year about, you know, 93% of the concentrates tested had pesticides in them. We don't know the science behind it, right? And so we definitely need to have support to do a lot of this research from the federal government, but we do not, in my opinion, want cannabis to be classified as a Schedule II substance. And the reason behind that is how fast this is moving. And A, there's already these adult use markets, so I think it would be a pretty big fight if that happened, is that that would fully go to pharmaceuticals. A Schedule II, so in case you're listening and you're like, well, Simone, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, what are these, what's the scheduling of, what's the Controlled Substance Act anyway? So I told you a little bit about the history of the Controlled Substance Act. And so what it is that there are five levels of controlled substances, 1 through 5. Okay, cannabis right now is listed as a level 1. And so that means the definition of a level 1 under the Controlled Substance Act is that it's drugs with no current accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. So what's listed? Heroin, LSD, marijuana, ecstasy, meth, and peyote. And so we all know that cannabis definitely shouldn't be on that. And I'm sure many of you would argue, well, maybe some of those others shouldn't be as well. Schedule 2 is a high potential for abuse, with use potentially leading to severe psychological or physical dependence. And so what's a Schedule 2? Cocaine, Vicodin, methamphetamine. So Schedule 1 was methaqualen. I don't know what that is. Fentanyl, which we already know is causing a huge amount of the opioid addictions. Adderall and Ritalin. A Schedule 3 is a high potential for abuse, with use potentially leading to severe psychological or physical dependence. And so that is not much different really than a Schedule 2, but Tylenol, codeine, ketamine, steroids, testosterone, all of those in 2016, I haven't updated this in 2018, were considered Schedule 3. What I find interesting is that Schedule 4 and Schedule 5, those have low potential for abuse and low risks of dependence. And that's like a Xanax, an Ambien, Tremadol. And so where I get very curious about, and I'd love to know everybody else's opinions on this, is, you know, I don't understand first the scheduling at all, but when you look into the symptoms of some of the drugs that are listed as a Schedule 2 or Schedule 4, I mean, there's like, I was going through this like crazy detail. I mean, it's like on a Schedule 4, for example, like some of the symptoms are, you know, death and overdose and addiction. And so I don't understand, you know, cannabis would ever be needed to be a Schedule 1 or 2. And so it's very important that when you do something with the FDA, and please, if you'd like the letter that we're sending the FDA to send as well, or if you'd like to comment on this letter, please let me know, Simone, S-I-M-O-N-E, @calogia.com. It's very important that we do take action, guys, we're right now part of history. And so my thought is the FDA is looking to understand, but with a very good dossier of why cannabis should be removed and descheduled. And I'd love to collaborate on all of this stuff with you guys. And the reason why they're looking right now is that in December of 2017, right? So 5 months ago, this was huge for the UN. So the UN basically did its initial study, and they did their initial study, and they said that CBD should not be scheduled as a controlled substance. So that's where I'm thinking that the FDA is kind of leaning towards, is that they're already seeing what's happening on an international level, and they're just trying to figure out what they would how they would kind of match and mirror, hopefully, the World Health Organization. And it's interesting because the World Health Organization has not released its final report of their stance on cannabis and cannabis resin extracts and tinctures, and we're going to see that in June. So guys, how I see all this, I see that cannabis legalization on a federal level is going to be happening so much sooner than a lot of us thought. In April alone, there were three major positive things that made me even more compelled to think this. So on April 11th, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the news, but the former House Speaker John Boehner, who's been a longtime opponent of marijuana legalization, announced that he's going to be serving on a board of advisors for a cannabis company. And the cannabis company, I'm going to try to get them actually on the podcast, is called Acreage Holdings, and they've got licensed cannabis facilities all in the United States. I think they've got their facilities in 11 states. Okay, so that was one very interesting piece of information. Then on April 13th, Mitch McConnell introduces the hemp bill in the Senate. And so right now, the hemp bill would not legalize cannabis for recreational or medical uses on a federal level, but it would allow for non-psychoactive forms of cannabis. So apparently there must have been some issues with the farm bill in 2014. But as it stands, as I mentioned earlier, you know, farmers face several barriers to growing hemp right now due to its federal prohibition. And, you know, that's the access to banking. It's 280E because it's still considered cannabis. Cannabis is Schedule 1. 280E exists on Schedule 1 and 2 substances. And the hardest thing is that farmers that are even working in hemp and cannabis, they can't really find valid crop insurance for outdoor grows. We saw this happen during the wildfires of in California, where there were so many poor farmers that lost everything and didn't have crop insurance. So really having this, if this hemp bill could go and actually get approved, this would be so huge for hemp farmers in the United States. And we all know with legalization comes jobs. And so the last thing that happened, which was last week, is that a senator from Colorado, Cory Gardner, announced publicly that President Donald Trump has committed to him that the Department of Justice rescission of the Cole memo, which was a huge blow for so many of us because the Cole memo protected states with legal cannabis from any federal like intrusion from the DEA. But he announced that, you know, Trump basically said that I quote, President Trump has assured me that he will support a federalism-based legislation solution to fix this state's rights issue once and for all. And that was for the Colorado market. So that means medical and adult use, guys. And so if you add all these pieces of the puzzle together and you add in the FDA also asking us for our opinion as citizens, and I please, if you're listening to this and it's before April 23rd, please just go to the show notes. I will put the link in, even in the iTunes show notes of where you could submit this. Please, this is your civil responsibility as a citizen that wants to participate in cannabis like business. Definitely, definitely put in your comments. Because guys, how I see it is that if all of this stuff is happening, more and more states are coming on board, right? Utah and Oklahoma just announced some stuff. We already see that in 1691, the U.S. allowed us to grow hemp. We even saw that it was in the pharmacopoeia, right, in 1850. Guys, we have something that is so amazing that we can come together and we can hopefully shape cannabis federal legalization in the way that we want to. And to me, this is so exciting. We are all part of history right now. If you're listening, you're like, I haven't done anything. You've listened to this and you know that you can make a change. So I am super pumped with all of this kind of stuff. And I hope I didn't overwhelm all of you with all these facts and all this data, but it's so important for you to understand, especially as it's on 420, what's happened in the last 400 plus years in the United States with cannabis. It has been a very sad story of, you know, understanding that this plant can do so much for so many people. And unfortunately, we have struggled from the social justice issue of seeing people go to jail for crimes that really they shouldn't have been able to, that they shouldn't have gone to jail for. We've seen this at a disproportional rate for minorities. We've seen that people have not had access to medicine, which in, you know, in the 1850s, they believed that cannabis could help with opioid addiction. And we're seeing this horrible opioid problem right now. So guys, I please, please, please ask you, make sure that you're preaching to the choir, not only to the choir, but to other people about the benefits of cannabis legalization. So honestly, that's going to be a wrap for today's show. I am so pumped that you've listened to it. Again, we've got some amazing people lined up for the next few weeks. I will be recording on a weekly basis. I'm recording every Friday. So a podcast should be dropping Monday to Tuesday at the latest. And guys, it's so funny. Every one of my podcast guests is like, oh my God, I've been getting so many emails. I've been getting so many people to reach out. Please let me know. Shoot me an email, simona@calagia.com. What kind of podcast do you want to hear? What are your problems in the cannabis industry? How can I help? And how can people in Calagia also help you? We're here for you. You know, we think that this is one of the most exciting times to be alive and to really do that hustle and to do good things for not only America, but for the world. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Cannabis Business Minds. I'm your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins, CEO of Calagia, and I look forward to talking with all of you guys, hopefully at one of our cannabis business boot camps, our cannabis finance boot camps, or even our May event for cannabis women in Santa Monica. So thank you so much and have a lovely, lovely day. And for all of you who are 420 fans, make 420 every day if you can be productive. I'll talk to you all later. Have a good day. And thank you all so much for listening to Cannabis Business Minds. I'm your podcast host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins with Calagia. Connect with me on calagia.com and we will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to today's show. This is your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins of calagia.com. I hope that you find this episode entertaining and insightful. My goal is to educate all of you about this exciting business because knowledge is power. If you haven't already, head on over to calagia.com to connect with me and to meet other business leaders in the professional cannabis community. Also, if you like this, please go into iTunes and leave the Cannabis Business Minds podcast a 5-star review. See you next episode.